Hello and welcome to the Maverick Radio Hour. It is December 15th, 2021. I'm your host, Garrett Tufte, and it's a dark and stormy night out there here in Kansas City, Missouri. And I'm here today to bring you another extemporaneous verbal essay, this time based on some of what I've written before. This one's probably going to be a little less extemporaneous, you might say, because there are very specific things that I kind of want to go through that I haven't directly addressed, even though a lot of it's written down. Now, first off, a couple of building off of some of what I was talking about the last couple of weeks, namely that of the introspective strategies and the what you might call extrospective, I guess, strategies. Namely, ways to look at yourself and clear up, look inside oneself and clear up the junk that might be in there that have been thrown into our minds over years in whatever manner, whether it was in our actual lives or something that came in through media influence. And at the same time, also to see the world that we're inhabiting with clear eyes and to use our senses, because a lot of people would say, and this is clear, a lot of folks have lost their common sense. And I'd like to remind folks as well, I mean, in order for us to reconstruct that common sense, we have to utilize the other senses. So as the phrase common sense itself, I always thought when I was younger that it referred to, okay, this is a sense that everybody has. It's common to everybody. And it's supposed to be common to everybody. But what it really means, and this is direct, explicitly said by Da Vinci in his notes, is that it is the sense that is common to all the senses. So it's the sense of us, of our minds and spirit and that sort of thing, that brings together sight, sound, touch, smell, taste into one coherent whole. So that's why it's common. That's why it's common sense, as opposed to it being implicit within everyone. So a slight fix on the note there, but the etymology of that phrase, so to speak. But in order for us to fix that common sense, we need to fix the senses themselves. And one of them is the visual field of view that we have, the last couple generations, we have basically been the proliferation of video and screen technology has in so many ways captured our minds, such that I noticed this at least, and maybe I'm not the only one necessarily, and maybe I'm in a minority at this as well, but when I was younger and I was growing up, I was absolutely captivated with everything on the screen. Television, movies, got to be video games, that sort of thing. Because there's so much you can do in that sort of world, and if you really zone in to it and focus on it, you can forget about yourself and just live in that world that's put on that screen, and that can be fun and it can be great, but at the same time it comes with problems as well. And so I would suggest to those out there that to take a step back from that screen world and really look at your world as in a way a screen. You could see it as the movie playing out for you. Your movie is playing out through your eyes as you witness it. And then as you look at this movie and see what is happening in it, then you can utilize that self-determinable part of your soul to judge what's happening in it, and be like, how do I want this one to go? Do I want this to be a tragedy or a comedy? Do I really want to live within this Twilight Zone nightmare movie, or do I want to live in the Midsummer Night's Dream comedy movie, or live in the rom-com style of movie, or live in a pick your world, the type of thing that you would like to see. And I mentioned people who really like watching horror movies, and apparently if they really do like them that much, and hopefully they don't like them so much that they want them to be real. So I would suggest y'all to take a step back into your own world and notice that you have real power to change the outcome of what is happening in our world at present. Nobody in this life, in this plane of existence, is helpless to do something about what's going on. It's really, it's fear, and it's also a misplaced sense of duty. That, now what that duty is that one has, I explain pretty explicitly in Exorcism of Tyranny. And it really comes down to, especially if you're living in our country, and if you're living in anywhere in the Western world where human life is valued. I mean, quite literally, that's the level we've gotten to here, folks. If you value human life, if you value the human spirit, if you value yourself and your friends and your family and your kids and community, all that, that's what this comes down to. And having a valuing human life is the thing that will help get us out of a horror movie if you find yourself in one. And so I'd encourage you all to do that. And it says right there that duty to the American people in Exorcism of Tyranny is that if someone orders you to deprive another person of their rights in violation of the Constitution, particularly the Bill of Rights, it is your duty as an American to disregard that order. And if that order is especially egregious, report that person who gave it to you to the authorities. So that's really the only, order here in this pamphlet. There are some instructions for law enforcement, and law enforcement, Department of Justice, review the laws you've been ordered to enforce, who signed them, arrest and prosecute for offense of the referenced law below. When someone is removed from their position in government, their deputy takes their place, lather, rinse, repeat. And the relevant law is Title 18 U.S.C. Section 242, Deprivation of Rights Under Color of Law. And it carries fines, imprisonment, and more, depending on the nature of the offense. And so those are the two orders. That's it. Those are the only real duties that we have. The thing is this addresses that issue in the Nazi trials, where the defense of the concentration camp guards and of the doctors and nurses and all that who systematically murdered the Jews, they said they were just following orders. And that doesn't work. You can't just be following orders when you're given orders to harm people and to deprive them of their human rights. This is why it comes down to valuing human life. If you're, regardless of what position you're in, or who you're working for, or anything like that, if you're being ordered by your boss or some authority or some governmental agency person to do something that is antithetical to human life, that you know, takes away someone's basic rights, you need to recognize that. This needs to be recognized. You need to think about that. We need to think about that. And that's what this means. And this isn't anything new, but it's just it's a reassertion of the law of laws that we have had in place in the Western society for hundreds of years. Clearly, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights being the most prominent and pertinent to us here in America, but also there's things like the habeas corpus that is indemnified, and things like the Magna Carta. It was written and signed by the King of England back in 1250 or something like that. Anyway, so those are the two instructions in this flyer. That's really it. But there's more to this. There's more to Exorcism of Tyranny than just that flyer. I've already gone over it before in another broadcast, maybe about a month ago or a month or two ago, something like that. But I had not gone into the full chart, which you can find on my website as well. Again, toughdudesvariations.com. If you're listening to this, you're already there. So anyway, but there's a full chart there called the Tyranny Virus. And I'll go through it a little bit here. So it's called The Tyranny Virus, Deconstruction of a Societal Weapon, or The Great Unmasking. And this is a supporting document for The Great Awakening Part 2, Exorcism of Tyranny. So all this information that I have here on this chart is basically sort of like the data, in a way, that led to the flyer of Exorcism of Tyranny that had those two major suggestions. Not suggestions, I mean, these are orders. And I'm giving the order, but also this is the order coming from the founders of the American Republic. I'm acting as their, how you might say, messenger. I mean, they're dead, they're not around anymore, but I'm acting in their stead, you might say. And as well, I do believe God. This is the sort of thing that the biblical accounts very clearly show, that God is not into oppressing people. He's really not. If you haven't read the Bible, you should check it out. There's a few occasions where there's some slaughters, but there's some rationale for that. So I'm coming from that direction too, and that angle. Also, as a secular humanist as well, that's what I've been most of my adult life. And in the last few years, I've become a bit more religious, you might say, in many manners, particularly Christianity. Jesus is a top dog in my book. But anyway, back to the flyer here, or not the flyer, the big chart for the Tyranny Virus. So what's in here is the observations, so far as I could put together, about what's been happening, what happened at least certainly that first year that this got put together, and the relating societal issues that I noticed and that a lot of others were talking about as well, that led to me coming up with the flyer, particularly those couple of orders and the set of facts and a part of it. So in this chart, I go through there's a bunch of different boxes, and there's a box that has a component area and a temporal characteristic area. And each of these components is a component of the greater attack. So as a societal weapon, the Tyranny Virus, being a societal weapon. So the ideas for this thing, it seems pretty clear that this was what was going on behind the scenes, whether it was planned out in some dark room somewhere, or if it came about in sort of a quasi-organic manner. The actual things that occurred are the most pertinent here, and then trying to address them, i.e. as we addressed it in the flyer. So components of biological, psychological, emotional, educational, social, cultural, and political. And these are, these components, I'll go into them a little bit later. There's points of attack as well. What points of particularly our freedoms are being attacked by this, and how? There are some relevant observations that pertain to my personal observations that I saw in person. There's timing, how this times up with a few other greater societal trends. There's a detail on masks. I go into the particulars on them for those that are unaware. There's some other context as well that I mentioned pertaining to, again, larger societal trends, where it fits in this sort of our modern history. There's some tangentially related issues like that led to this, that I've noticed, some psychosocial aggregations. I'll get into what that means. I think I might have talked about that in prior broadcasts. A few miscellaneous notes, a note on conspiracy theories, the basic chart on industrial incentives and the industries that it pertains to are the pharmaceutical industry, and the hospital industry, you might say, or health industry, that's to say, quote-unquote big tech, chemicals, plastics, gig economy. Also, there's just a couple notes on market share, command and control, central banking, players and ideological groups. Big players are mainly what appear to me, China, United States, international corporations, not necessarily in that order, and whether or not, this isn't about necessarily culpability, but how each one relates to it. Just a comment on each one, you might say. There's some ideological groups as well. Communists, for what that means, and by the way, I mean, the idea of communism these days doesn't seem to have anything to do with what Marx was talking about in his Communist Manifesto. It had to do with workers taking over the means of production. Because, I mean, clearly that's... whatever's happening, whatever's attempting to be done to humanity today, that is not a part of it. I mean, it's about as far as from the intention of anyone really as possible, except for perhaps, I don't know, maybe in a way, I mean, the new economic, for me, there are some aspects of that that take a little bit from Marx's Communist Manifesto, but not pertaining, less pertaining to the means of production, but more pertaining to personal housing and, where it is that someone lives, such that, we can all own our own house or apartment. And Marx didn't even have he didn't have a mechanism that provided a fair exchange for the people whose property was going to the occupants. So there's a little bit of that in my plan, but I don't necessarily see that happening on the from outside sources, but it would appear that When I say communist here, what I'm talking about is what they're talking about Marxism, and we call it Marxism again. I don't know if that's really good either. I didn't notice anything in the Communist Manifesto that talked about generational psychological manipulation and destruction of history. Like I didn't see any of that in there when I read it. Maybe I need to read it again. I mean, I read the thing back in college, so. But I didn't notice anything about this, like, you know, deep, like diabolical type of under the current manipulation and, you know, subtle build of psychological abuse and destruction of history and destruction of the freedom of speech that Marx wrote about. It would appear to me that sort of thing, I mean, we call it Marxism or we call it communism, but it's not Marxist, so far as I could tell, based on his actual words. And it's not communist based on, you know, communism, quote unquote, as being an economic ideology. So the idea of there being no private property and people sharing everything, I mean, there's that, you know, what they call that communist utopia, you know, type of idea that I don't think what's happening now has anything to do with that. It would appear that what's happening now is like and it's not even necessarily something that Mussolini's definition of fascism leads to either, you know, a combination of government and corporate power. Because a combination of government and corporate power doesn't necessarily mean that it oppresses people. It doesn't necessarily mean that you know, just happens. Now, some have theorized that just the very idea of government and us placing ourselves within the reach of an ever larger beast of this sort, again, like the Leviathan idea we brought up before, is the sort of thing that necessarily leads to a destruction of the individual, slow or quick, and a taking over of his life and abuse from people who are higher in the pecking order, that sort of thing. But I don't necessarily see quote-unquote government itself as being inherently oppressive. Now, at the same time, what we can see amongst history is that is just what happens. So that's the thing. But that's why, and I brought this up before. Again, I don't know why I should even be mentioning that I brought these things up before. Y'all just need to hear this again, whatever it is that I'm saying. Namely, is that's why the American federal government and the Union of States, as the Founding Fathers put them together, including the Bill of Rights, is so vital, is that as long as the government adheres to those rights, to that Bill of Rights, and adheres to the rules of that founding document, of that Constitution, if we adhere to that, you know, we can do all sorts of other stuff within the frame. We can, you know, there's plenty of room for minor corruption all over the place. There's plenty of room for, you know, for egos to have their, to be filled and fulfilled, and for people to gain power on their own self-interest and everything else. But it has to stay within the frame of that Constitution and within that Bill of Rights. If you don't do that, then it just completely gets out of hand. And that's why I say that government itself is not necessarily inherently oppressive, because in the case that we have crafted here in our country, where it operates properly, where government adheres to within the framework of that Constitution, within that Bill of Rights, then we're in good shape. And there have been periods where that was the case, clearly, where we had incredible, incredible prosperity, and we're still the greatest country on this earth, so far as I can tell, in history, I mean, recorded history, what we know of, what I know of. And that's because we crafted a government that was as a condition of its very existence, it respected individual freedom. And even at that, not all individual freedom, not even all of it, but just the really important parts of it. And so long as a government respects these very important and vital aspects of individual freedom, then it is legitimate. And then it's not necessarily oppressive. And then you can have best of both worlds. You can have individual freedom, and you can also have these large-scale projects where we all get together and we do things that are beneficial for all of us. That's the beauty of this whole thing. That's the beauty of it. And it's always going to be at risk of being, you know, abused. And there's always going to be, there's going to be systems that try to do that. There's going to be, bad actors and unscrupulous characters who show up in one way or the other, try to, in a way, quote unquote, corner the market. In some cases, like we've seen, cornering the market on human resources in key positions in key industries in order to hold the American people hostage in portions of the government, such that, in order for us to operate, we'd have to, do whatever it is the hostage takers say. But we don't need to negotiate with terrorists. And the more that we understand this fact, that I understand this, that you understand this, that he understands this, that she understands this, that our enemies understand this, that that ultimately there is no benefit for them and for their families and their posterity to perpetuate the authoritative abuses that are going on. I don't care whether you're, even if you're Xi Jinping in China, or if you're Putin over in Russia, or if you're an oligarch in some South American country, or if you're a peasant doing subsistence agriculture in Africa, or you're a priest in India, or whatever. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're coming from, this philosophy of government is the way to have it, certainly as an aspect of the operative manner in which we come together to assist each other in large-scale projects without oppressing the individual. This is the way to do it. We have found a way in order to make this happen. Now, the reason this is happening right now, so far as I can tell, is because not enough people are aware of this functional ideology. And that is that's a great failure on the part of, I guess let's say the educational system, media, that sort of thing. The extreme importance of having a government that adheres to the law of laws, or the laws of laws, and the vital importance of that very thing, and how that relates to our individual lives. Because none of us are going to be having a good time in any sort of dystopian, authoritarian, technocratic, surveillance state future. It doesn't matter if you're the guard or the prisoner. Your life's going to suck. That's where this goes. So that's why we've, the technology that we've crafted simply allows for large-scale oppression, where in the past it would be small-scale oppression. You would have some king over here that was horrible to his people, treated them all like slaves. And then you'd have the king over there who was very good to his people and was very kind and wasn't abusive and didn't take very much from them and wasn't interested in attacking his neighbors in order for some vain glory. So there were differences there. And some evil force could only go so far. Well, the technology has allowed the potential for that very thing to be applied, you know, as much as we let it. And again, this goes back to big tech and the sort of motivations that they're coming from. Not just the motivations, but the I'd like to stick with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. mentioned in his most recent Fauci book when he was talking about it, is that he tried to stick to the conduct. When he analyzed Fauci and what he did, he tried to stick to conduct, what he actually did, as opposed to placing a motivation or speculating on the motivation. In which case, that's vital for how a lawyer, or judge, and a jury would look at anyone's alleged crimes. Is the motivation is there, and that's a part of the thing, but that's a part of conviction. And it's pertinent for the case. But the conduct is number one. I mean, you could be the most evil person in the world, but you never did anything wrong to anybody. Well, if your motivation was like, ooh, I'm gonna get at everybody. Oh yeah, we're gonna get them. Oh yeah, this worst motivation on the entire planet, the most evil person you could ever imagine, but never actually did anything. I mean, clearly conduct takes precedent over motivation, in any sense. Someone needs to write a movie about that. That'd be an interesting character to to look into. Anyway, okay, I guess I've gotten off on a quite a tangent. Nonetheless, it needed to be said. Let's go back to the chart. We'll go through a few things here. So there's players, ideological groups, and the ideological groups, communists, criminals, population controllers, quote unquote, environmentalists. That's kind of a side note. Not doesn't appear to be, you know, behind this really. But on a separate note as well, I'd like to say that for those who are really interested in stymieing global warming, I would suggest that looking at A New Economic and the fact that it of itself is the best answer to excessive fossil fuel usage. It really is. When you give people their own place to live, when you give, as Virginia Woolf called it, give everyone a room of one's own, that allows them to work as much or as little as they would like. And as a result, we bring down in an organic manner where we all get to choose what we wish. We bring down in an organic manner the excessive consumerism that has been prevalent in much of our modern America. And so that brings everything to a local and efficient source, as opposed to having globalists polluting with globalism, claiming globalism the solution to pollution. Like it's so anyway, yeah, new economic is the best way for that. And when that happens, I mean, when we get to it, we'll, it would appear to me that that's the direction that we're going. When you look at the level of inflation that's going on right now, and you know how far further it will go, that of itself, it just it leads to, you know, pretty great problems, to say the least. And a way out of that is by introducing a new currency that that is based on and tied to real estate and properties. I should say as well, for what properties exactly are so pertinent in step one of a new economic, really just the room of one's own, the apartment, the house, that's, you know, paramount. Because that allows, in a way, if you look at what's been done with the what they call the petrodollar, that we ensured that oil sales world over end up going through the U.S. dollar, that strengthens our currency in an astounding manner. Really does. And a stroke of genius, I should say, by those who, you know, help put that sort of thing together. But that, it would be, it's like a petrodollar, except it would be basically properties that would only be traded in this new currency. So it ties that, that's where the currency would be established in. That would be the standard, so to speak. And so, let's see, where were we? So, yeah, that's a new economic again in that part one there. Really, that's the big thing, is properties where people live. Apartments, houses, that sort of thing. If you add too much into that, you know, it depends on how many people we can get working on this, and whether you can balance the books, so to speak, how well you can balance the books and make sure that the currency you're introducing, there's enough of it to encourage, to allow for, that is to say, enough economic exchange amongst everyone, while at the same time making sure that the people whose properties they are getting paid for, they get the payout from them, that the currency that they get is of a how would you say, of a strong sort, such that it doesn't immediately inflate, and, you know, they suddenly lose the value of what once was a very strong property that they'd worked so long to gain. So, I mean, this is there's a balance there, and big time mathematics, like, that require, and I might have mentioned this before, I mean, this is the sort of thing that you'd need an army of accountants, kind of like you need an army of engineers to design the Apollo missions to go to the moon. It's a massive project. This is it not the sort of thing that can just happen overnight, boom, and, you know, I do some back of the envelope calculations and then stand up on a hill somewhere and then declare it so. It doesn't work that way. And I think folks who look into this will see that for themselves. And that's not just the case here in the States, but really any other country or nation state that wants to do a similar thing for themselves. So This is the sort of thing that, again, this is applicable in a similar manner that that the exorcism of tyranny, that, you know, I'm only given these couple of orders in this pamphlet, and these orders are nothing new. Again, I'm just bringing the message from the founding fathers of our country, at minimum, along with the judges, prosecutors, jury from the Nuremberg trials, along with everyone who had a hand in the Geneva Conventions, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, etc., etc. Anyway, but that applies, these apply to everyone, because these are God-given rights that we have. Every human being has these rights. You don't need, government isn't instituted to give you these rights. You have them already. And whoever says that you doubt, that you don't, is, quite honestly, they're misinformed. Or they're trying to be your master. They want to be your slave master, such that you stay a slave, such that they can stay in control of you. And that's what we can all avoid. And everyone in the world can avoid that. This isn't related to, oh, it's only us in the United States that are deserving of individual liberty. At least individual liberty of a few vital metrics. And if we stick to those vital metrics, you can have an incredibly strong government and economy and prosperity and happiness for everyone. And in a similar manner, with the new economic, really, it's any country can do this. Any nation state can theoretically do this for themselves, for the benefit of their people. Is it beneficial for you? I mean, if it's the sort of thing that you know, Tanzania did 2 years ago, it's probably not going to be probably not going to be smart to do it again now. It's the sort of thing where when you run into if this hasn't been done before, you look at the metrics of your society. What sort of things would this benefit? And namely, I lay those out in the chart for a new economic. And again, just a few of them. What parts would it benefit to do this? And then you take a look at your statistics. Okay, let's see how many people in the country, you know, are living paycheck to paycheck. Okay, X amount. X percentage. Okay, how many people in the country own their own house? Okay, that's X percent. Okay, how many? I mean, what sort of national debt do we have here? Okay, all right, it's that much. Let's see, how much? You know, all these sorts of things. This is the data that leads to whether or not it's worthwhile can be crunched mathematically. You can calculate all this. Based on a number of societal statistics that of their own accord will show whether it's beneficial to introduce such a thing. And I think for us here in the States, it is beneficial to bring this on. Now, considering our position in the world and our position in the global economy, it's important that we bring this on in a way that is not, you know, me going out on a hill and announcing it and saying, oh, this is what's happening, but that the necessary infrastructure in order for us to work with it, in order to have this new economy at the ready to go, have it sort of building and growing and working within the industries that are affected and the people that are affected, those especially who are, in key positions, for, let's say, those who have a lot of properties, those who have a connection to, who rely on global trade that will be shaken up greatly by bringing on a new currency like this. And everybody in government, you know, from local to state to federal levels. And so there's a necessity there that the folks, you know, we bring and change our economy such that it works in the present world of a global economy, and also for it to be ready to go to transform into the new one. So that is, it would appear to me in a way that that's happening right now. This virus panic, for all the horror and madness that it's brought on, in a way has been the economic effects of it have been similar to like the slow motion changes that what you might say renationalizing an economy with this new economic would require for there to be not a complete, you know, a breakdown of the economy, that there's a smooth transition, so to speak. And so in a way it almost seems like it's a blessing in disguise on that front. That is to say, if we get to that point, because it would appear to me that there really, it really is necessary for us to fight here, because there are enemies to liberty all over the world, and not just all over the world, but also in our own country, who are trying to take advantage of this moment that we have in order to impose an authoritarian, dystopian, technocratic hellscape upon us here in the States and the rest of the world, as I think anybody can see, because it's in your backyard now. Over the last 10, 15 years, when I was trying to come up with this, the new economic, I noticed that there was something coming. These economic conditions are getting worse and worse, like for people in general. Where is this leading us? Why is, I noticed people's health getting worse and worse. I noticed them being further and further detached from reality. I noticed all these signs that were like, okay, this isn't good. That's getting worse. That's bad. What's going on here? Why is this, and a lot of people just were kind of in a lot of ways unaware of it. And I think that's part of the reason so many folks have been unaware of it is that, in addition to all the rationale that I brought up before and that many others have as well, is that there's this adherence or there's this conditioning to the 24-hour cycle of day, night, get up and go, get up and go, get up and go thing that it slows down or it changes and it gets people to focus so much just on one day at a time. And then you go to bed, you sleep, wake up the next day. Like in the David Bowie song, do you even remember what happened yesterday? Do you remember the bills you have to pay? Do you remember your President Nixon? It was in Young Americans. But the conditioning, so much of the conditioning we've had is tied us into this 24-hour cycle, which, I mean, it's a real cycle. It's a real cycle, and, you know, sun goes around Earth goes around the sun. The Earth spins, and we have this cycle. But what I'm saying is that there are larger scale cycles. and for us to see the long term benefit to our lives, and seeing and witnessing and watching the long term changes that happen to us over the course of a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, is really important for us to get a handle on the large scale things. You have to look at things in a larger scale, which requires on a practical level, on a personal level, to see, okay, how is it you're going to figure out that things have, let's say, that the distance that people have toward each other has been increasing, like over the course of, 5 years. And you could just be like, oh, well, what's the amount of time that people spend on electronic devices today as opposed to 5 years ago? Boom, there you go. I mean, and you could look at it in your own life and be like, okay, how much time am I spending on my electronic device as opposed to something else? I mean, I could just as soon be playing solitaire as reading news stories on my phone. But that's a vital metric in order to see the change in society in your own life, this is the pertinent point that we're talking about here, in order to see the changes in your own life that are thereby, coming from larger scale societal changes. Now, are those larger scale societal changes organic, or are they, imposed or brought on by a hierarchy of sorts? I don't know. But you first need to identify a thing before you see where it came from. And for people to identify what's going on in their personal lives and how they're being affected by larger scale things, it's important to actually see the differences between your life today as opposed to your life 5 years ago. And really look at that. Really look at it. And see that, write them down. Like, okay, I spend X amount of hours on my phone. Or I spend X amount of time doing this, or Y amount of time doing that, etc. How many was it last time? When you were out at the park, how many people did you see at the park 5 years ago? As opposed to today, when you go to the park, how many people do you see? How many boats did you see on the water 5 years ago? How many boats do you see on the water now? How much food of a certain sort is there in the grocery store today as opposed to 5 years ago? How much do you spend on clothing today as opposed to 5 years ago? All these are metrics that you can check out for yourself. And I mean, and each one of those are something you can clearly look at and be like, okay, how is it different today as opposed to what it was 5 years ago? What's the difference? And you could look at something again in the same sort of manner. Okay, what was it 2 weeks ago? What was it a month ago? What was it 2 months ago? Because this is how the large-scale authoritarian changes that are being imposed upon us, that I especially brought up there when I mentioned the communists and the players and ideological groups part of this tyranny virus chart, that has nothing, very little, if anything, to do with the economic ideology that he was writing about at the time, and that ostensibly is the economic ideology that present-day communists are about. Because what's being done to us is something very different than that. What's being done to us is longitudinal social engineering of our lives on an individual level, on a larger scale level. On a large scale level that leads down to the individual, and with psychological manipulation that has been absolutely scientifically weaponized to the highest degree by over 100 years of the most brilliant psychologists and psychiatrists and social scientists working with multiple cultures across, working on just about every culture on the planet in order to figure out how we tick as people and as communities the world over in order to better psychologically manipulate groups of us. So you really have to see how your life is being attempted to be altered by these, in some cases subtle, but in other cases very obvious manipulations, in order to look at it and be like, okay, well, what's the rationale for that? Where did that come from? If we can't agree that something has changed, if we can't agree that there's a metric here that is different, if we can't agree that you think it's perfectly fine to be locked in your house and terrified of going outside and having to wear around a muzzle and be injected repeatedly with some experimental gene therapy, for a virus that has a 99% survivability rate, and has an average age of death with it that's higher than the average life expectancy. Like, I mean, the absurdities are really, it's beyond absurd. But looking at that whole situation, if there are people who can look at that situation and be like, oh no, this is fine, I don't know how to help you. Like, I really don't. I mean, you do remember what it was like a couple of years ago before all this happened, correct? Do you remember that? I mean, sometimes I wonder if some people do. Anyway, or I might just be, let's not go there. Let's not go any further in that direction. But the point being here, to finish up on that, what I mentioned about that communistic aspect of this, when we talk about Marxism, we talk about communism, it's important to remember that, so far as I could tell, when I was reading the Communist Manifesto, it was not about generational psychological manipulation. It was not about using subliminal, alteration, sociological techniques in order to engineer people into. I mean, that's something that has come along in the last 100 years, especially in the last 50 years since World War II. I mean, you can look at the Stalinists, what Stalin did. I mean, this is really Stalinist, attacks on. A Stalinist-style authoritarian attacks, and also Maoist. Clearly, I mean this, and you can add that to the Chinese influence to this this attempted takeover of the free world. But so this tyranny virus chart here, I barely read any of it. Let's read a couple things here with what time we have left in the hour. Relevant observations. Highly notable from personal experience, March through May 2020, that influenced the determinations, deductions, and inferences shown hereon. Number one, the relative health of the homeless population in Washington, D.C. The lack of patients at, quote, hotspot hospitals. Three, the closing of public bathrooms. And four, the mass imposition of masks. Timing. The tyranny virus, the timing of it. This virus panic was timed to coincide with generational usage of media and inflection points in the advancement of consumer technology, epitomized by and requiring the proliferation of smartphones, such that we would be dependent upon their usage in as many vital communications as possible, and that this usage could be leveraged for the con of cons, cementing a digital coup over the nations. Timing, such that people would have sufficient electronic entertainment to keep them complying with lockdown orders. Timing, such that when real censorship is introduced, many people would be completely unaware of it at all, being that they had already stopped communicating in other traditional manners, like in person or in writing on paper. Timing such that the younger generation had been sufficiently raised on the screens. Timing such that, coincident with communication technology development, squelches the voices of those who are clearly against the prevailing deception and allows what leaders who mandate the abuses we have experienced to hide behind screens and firewalls, to avoid seeing the people they have hurt in real life, and avoid hearing real reason that would destroy the illusions that they rely on, and to protect themselves from righteous justice with comfortable ignorance. That's just the timing portion of this. And I should like to note that that portion there, who mandate abuses we have experienced to hide behind screens and firewalls to avoid seeing the people they have hurt in real life. This is a thing that has been getting increasingly worse over the years. It is increasingly more and more difficult to address the people that we have elected in positions of authority and to really get them to do anything that has benefited us as people. It has been an absolute nightmare. And just like banging your head against the wall, trying to get, in my efforts in local politics, to really get like the city commission to do anything that benefited people, it was pretty impossible. It really was. There are a few folks who I saw and witnessed ended up getting some money from them for a public project or two. That did actually happen. I watched that happen. That was fun. It's interesting. But it was very minor. Very, very minor. But I just noticed that it got worse and worse. Now, when you take that effect, it was already clear that most of the people who got in these positions, at least where I was where I was witnessing in local politics, who really didn't seem to have, you know, they really didn't seem to care much about the aggregate benefit to the public when it came to things, even when the whole public was against them, against a particular policy or for a particular policy. I don't know. It was rare to see them side with people on this. But then you take that aspect that was getting increasingly worse in many ways. And I'm sure not just in the places that I was in my local politics, in my local town or city, or the state I was, a few times that I was involved there as well, but elsewhere across the country. And you take that and then you apply it to, okay, now, oh, look at this. Now the only way that we're allowed to interact with our local politicians who are in charge of our town is through a Zoom meeting. That is through some computer screen that is entirely centralized and controlled, where, I mean, the ridiculous manner in which that went to the next level of making sure that the people were completely ignored on, that any politician, or any elected public official had the ability to simply ignore their entire constituency was taken to the next level on with this virus panic and were it to continue. I mean, the absolute madness that would bring on, the solely digital council meetings and solely digital commissions at the state house and that sort of thing. Just absolute madness. Me too. So, anyway, I noticed that greatly at the time. And I should like to note as well that this, and I think I'll leave it at that. We're about at a little over an hour here. But this is, I'll go into this further in further broadcasts. This is the tyranny virus, deconstruction of the societal weapon, or the great unmasking. And this I wrote and released especially on the 30th of June of this year. And I'll go into it further at a later date. But you can go see this on my website. It should be in, you go to the philosophy tab, and you should be able to find it, TGA 2, that is the Great Awakening Part 2, Exorcism of Tyranny, Supporting Document, Tyranny Virus, and check that out. Fortunately, we appear to be witnessing, again, those many winds that are coming along against this authoritarian takeover, and take heart that this is happening. And again, we still need everyone in the game here. People, stand up for your rights. Don't let a bunch of jerk-offs who just want to control you, a bunch of control freaks and petty tyrants, tell you what to do with your life. Stand up for yourself and your constitutional rights, for your friends and for your family, for community and for all posterity. And with that, I'll leave you to it on this dark and stormy night of December 15th, 2021. This has been the Maverick Radio Hour with your host, Garrett Tufte, coming to you from Kansas City, Missouri, wishing you peace, love, harmony, justice, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.